Good afternoon and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Fresh on the heels of yesterday's podcast where we discussed the five GM names, we will discuss five potential head coaching candidates. To discuss this, one of the best content creators in all of the nation on social media, Ryan Holmes. Good afternoon, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good. Best in all of the nation. I like that intro.
Man, listen, like, you actually provide a breakdown where people can actually see things. Like, there was one you posted where the Deshaun Jackson being angry that Carr missed him wide open when he drove the cornerback 12 yards away from him and he didn't get the ball. Like, that has made its rounds all over the place. That is a – if there was no indictment of Derek Carr, that would be it.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. It was tying situation, one timeout. Clearly could have got out of bounds. I just looked at it. It was, I posted it last night. I think there was like 57,000 views already. So it's picking up some steam today.
Quality, my man. Now, chances are Rich Bisaccia will not see next year as a NFL head coach. And if you cheer for the Las Vegas Raiders, you should be thankful. With that, Ryan has compiled a list of five head coaching candidates that he would like the team to possibly pursue. Now, before we get into them, what were your criteria and what did you focus on?
Well, the first thing I wanted to look at was the offensive side of the football. So for me, these are all going to be five offensive candidates. I believe in the NFL, that's how you need to build. You need to have continuity with the quarterback. Some of these defensive coaches are great. But what happens with if there's any success and you go to the playoffs multiple years, then all of a sudden teams are poaching your offensive coordinator. You're having to reboot. Unless you have a really good foundation internally with quarterback coaches, offensive quality control coaches, you know, maybe a tight ends coach that could call plays, you're going to have turnover there. So with the way this league is going, it's very offensive-oriented and dictated. I wanted to focus on offensive coaches. I have one guy who was a previous head coach before. The other four are going to be first-time head coaches.
Okay, and with this list, we're going to – who is your first candidate?
Okay, so for Clarence, I guess yesterday a lot of people thought those were the order I wanted of the five guys I listed. So these are in no particular order. I have five guys. I changed back and forth having done research on some of these guys the last couple of days. I've changed my mind. So I'm not 100% sold on who's my number one candidate, but we'll start in Dallas. Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys, is the youngest guy on this list. He's 33 years old. You're approaching Sean McVay. You know, I think he was hired at 31 or 32. John Gruden back the first stint with the Raiders was in his early to mid 30s. I want to say 33 or 34. So this is about getting ahead of the curve. You'd rather, you know, get him a year or two too early. There's going to be some growing pains there, but you're not going to miss out on him. You don't want to wait till it's a year after the fact, and then you don't have the next McVay or even Shanahan, the success he had early on. But Kellen Moore, his coaching resume is very small. We'll go right into it. He was a six-year quarterback in the NFL, played at Boise State where he set a ton of records. He's been in the NFL for four seasons. He was the quarterback coach in Dallas in 2018, was promoted to the offensive coordinator in 2019, where he's held that role for 3 years. This could be a case where Jerry Jones may be forced to promote him to head coach and move on from Mike McCarthy if he really wants to keep him. But when you start diving into the numbers, this guy is a highly creative play caller. There's balance all over this offense, and he's a very high football IQ. He's doing some things with 4x1 formations, putting linemen out wide, like throwing everything he can at defenses. But this is a team that can throw the ball and they can run the ball. And I understand they have very good personnel, but, you know, just looking at it, 2019, his first year calling plays, they were the number one ranked offense in the league at 432 yards a game. They were number two in passing and number five in rushing. So that is really good balance. The Raiders can't run the ball at all. If you could get anywhere near top 10 in rushing and passing, that would be great. He did get an interview last year for the Eagles job, so his name is starting to get out there. We fast forward to 2020 last year. You know, Dallas wasn't nearly as good. But through 5 weeks with Dak Prescott, they were number one in passing, and they had three games of over 400 yards. Even having said that, you throw Andy Dalton, Ben DiLucci, the other quarterbacks they ran out there last year, they still finished 17th in scoring at nearly 25 points a game and were still 13th in the league in yardage. So they were still scoring and they were still putting up points, even with those guys behind center. And then you just go right to 2021. What's Dallas doing this year now that they got Dak Prescott back? They're number one in yards per game. They're number four in passing. They're number six in rushing. They're number two in points per game. So for the if you just want to look at 2019 and 2021, the 2 years where he's had Prescott, obviously Amari Cooper's over there now. They have a defensive offensive line. They have Zeke Elliott. But they're top five in rushing, passing, and points per game. I don't know what else you could look for in a head coaching candidate. So can he duplicate that success without those pieces? That's going to be the question. Can you get him away from Dallas right now? I don't know. And then he's probably going to be at the point where he's so young, he can just sit back and wait for the right opportunity. He's not going to jump at the first team that just offers him the job unless he feels it is a fit. But, you know, he went to Boise State, you know, kind of Mountain West Conference. Maybe he has some affinity for the West Coast, Vegas, having probably played against UNLV in college. But he'll have the full run here. The other thing you'd need with a guy like this, similar to when Sean McVay took over the Rams, he's going to have a veteran defensive coordinator, a guy that he can trust to handle that side of the ball while he focuses on the offense early. So he had Wade Phillips, who was kind of came with Sean McVay. Does Kellen Moore have an older, veteran, sagey defensive coordinator lined up, or would he keep Gus Bradley? I don't know what he'd do there, but he does have connections to Rod Marinelli. He does have connections to Rich Bisaccia, who are both currently on the Raiders staff.
Now, with Kellen Moore, first, you said he played in the league, and he statistically has won just himself more games at college quarterback than anyone in FBS history. He is, I mean, he is the, and his stats are like video game numbers, and he came from a passing offense at Boise. But to your point, one of the things I do like about Kellen Moore among that he kind of seems like he prefers plays over system. What systematically or what schematically have you seen, or just from the football sense and the feel, that stands out most about this candidate?
Yeah, that's the thing. They're not dead set on one particular scheme. There was a great article that came out, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. I read about him where it's players. What can I do versus certain defenses to get the ball in certain players' hands and situations? They're not dead set on, hey, this is our playbook. We're running West Coast. We're running, you know, a vertical passing game. They do everything in the passing game. It's all about creating advantages with numbers. And then they do everything in the running game too. So it's kind of I would call it the cheesecake factory of offenses. Like when you go there and you see the menu and it has everything you want, that's kind of what Dallas does. They can do a little bit of everything in the passing game, in the running game, different concepts, whether it's zone runs or it's power runs, whether it's, you know, the quick screens, whether it's 4x1, 3x1, how they attack vertically, where they put CeeDee Lamb, where they put Amari Cooper, the different things they can do with Tony Pollard, the different things they do with Zeke Elliott. So they get the tight ends involved with Schultz, so they can get the ball to anybody at any time in any formation. Like, so it's pretty interesting watching that offense.
And, Lucid, I think the age helps because as a Raiders, the need for a retread, there comes a point where the league itself, just generally speaking, has to kind of deviate away from the retread coaches who get 3, 4, 5 shots at 5 bites of the apple. Like, we don't need any more modern-day Mike Mularkey types to come in, grab a job for 2 years, and then go sit down after being fired again. Moore gives them, I think, long-term creativity. Now, when we come back from break, we will break down 2 and 3 on Ryan's list. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, who is your second candidate?
Yeah, the second candidate, I go down to Tampa Bay. Offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich is down there. Again, similar to Moore, really good college career as a quarterback, played in the league. I want to say Leftwich was a 10-year player in the league. He didn't start for all 10 years, but had a 10-year career. If you remember anything about his playing days at Marshall, the dude played on a broken leg. His offensive linemen were carrying him down the field on a drive that I remember late in his career. So toughness is definitely not an issue with Byron Leftwich. The resume is short, just like Kellen Moore. He's been a coach for 5 years in the NFL. He started out in Arizona with Bruce Arians as a quarterback coach in 2017 to 2018. Was promoted to the interim offensive coordinator in the middle of 2018. And then obviously there was a staff change there. He follows Bruce Arians to Tampa Bay in 2019, where he's been the offensive coordinator for the past 3 years. So this was interesting. I wanted to look at the numbers. Tom Brady versus Jameis Winston. What did he do as the play caller? Was it any different when Tom Brady got there? And I was shocked. It's actually not. Like, the offense, aside from the turnovers that Jameis Winston had in 2019, ranking-wise in the league, they're very similar. So he basically put up the same kind of production with Jameis Winston that he has with Tom Brady. So to me, that was a good selling point because I was afraid it was going to be the opposite. Like, Tom Brady's driving this offense, but it's not. He did the same thing with Jameis Winston. So if you want to look at the numbers, in 2019, Jameis Winston, we all know, threw for 5,100 yards, 33 touchdowns, 30 interceptions. It was kind of a running joke that he went 30-30. But when you look inside the numbers, they were third in scoring with Jameis Winston at nearly 29 points a game. They were third in the red zone. They were 13th on third down. They were the number one passing team in the NFL. They didn't run the ball very well, though. They were at 24. So what's happened since Tom Brady's got there? 2020, second in scoring at 31 points a game, 11th in red zone, 9th on third down, number 3 in passing. And, again, they don't run the ball, 25th in running. Same thing this year, 2021, number 1 in scoring, number 5 in red zone, number 3 in third down, number 1 in passing, number 25 in running. So this is a team that's been in the bottom third of the league running the ball, but basically in all the other categories, passing, they've been number 1 twice, scoring their top 3 all 3 years, red zone, third, fifth, and 11th, third down, they're kind of in that third to 10, so the top third of the league again. So the offense hasn't really missed a beat. It's just the turnovers have been taken away. And obviously Tom Brady that's a product of Tom Brady, not Jameis Winston. But when I saw that, you know, he kind of went up on my list a little bit. A minority candidate, he satisfied the Rooney Rule. But I think he's going to get a real shot here as the head coach in the next, you know, year or two. If it's not this year, it'll be next year. I was surprised during my research he didn't get one request for an interview last year, which I thought he probably did. But it turns out from what I saw, he did not. So how is he going to handle the interview process? He's probably never been through it, clearly hasn't been through it for a head coaching position. He's done it on the offensive coordinator side, but he's kind of followed Bruce Arians around as well. So he played under Bruce Arians at the end of his career, joined him in Arizona, joined him in Tampa Bay. So he's never kind of been away from that. But for the Raiders fans that want the vertical, down-the-field passing game, this would be your guy because that's the system Bruce Arians runs.
Now, one thing with Byron Leftwich, a few questions. One, it seems as though just scanning different type of reports and scouting reports that he increased the pre-snap motion that Tampa likes to run. Do you think that's a product of his choice, a product of him sitting down with Tom Brady, or a combination of the two?
It's probably a combination of the two. I'm sure Brady wanted it to help him identify coverages pre-snap, where to go with the ball, things like that, which that helps any quarterback. But clearly, if the quarterback has a better idea of what he's facing pre-snap, he can make better decisions. Tampa Bay is number one in the league as far as snap to the ball gets out of the quarterback's hands. They're like 2.1 seconds. So a lot of that is Tom Brady, but think about that. They're getting the ball out on average 2.1 seconds per pass play, and they're still the number one passing team in the league. So they're still getting those vertical shots. They're just doing it quickly. Now, I understand the weapons he has here. It's very similar to Dallas. I mean, you have Mike Evans. You have Godwin. You had Antonio Brown for a while. You had Gronkowski. You have Brady. You have Leonard Fournette. You have a good offensive line. So can they duplicate this success away from that? I'm leaning more yes than no based on what they did with Jameis Winston. So he's definitely a candidate that needs to get interviewed.
Now, you mentioned in your first one you had a quarterback who had marginal success but as a player but has phenomenal success as a clinician. The inverse is correct for – actually, not inverse, but pretty much you have Byron Leftwich who had a pretty strong career for a decade as a quarterback, some as a starter, some as a backup. Do you think when he walks in, say if he does get the job, he walks in and sees Derek Carr there, you are a scout in another sport. Do players or do coaches or managers who play the game at a high level, can they sense somebody else who can? And can is it a gut feeling, or is it more of they go by tape? Like, can they sense if somebody can do what they ask before they actually start talking to them, as far as is this quarterback going to be the guy?
Oh, for sure. Like, players know players. They know who the real ones are and who they aren't. So I'm sure, you know, Byron Leftwich played 10 years in this league. He's been coaching in this league for 5 years. He's been around professional football now for 15 years. He knows who can play and who can't. So when he walks in the door, I would assume that he would be one that would want to keep Carr around, because he might fit pretty good in this type of offense, attacking vertically down the field. If you can get him to start doing that, he throws a good deep ball. It's just getting him to do it consistently. I definitely think that both of these candidates, in my opinion, would be guys that would want to keep Derek Carr around at least for a year to see how they handle these type of systems. I think just looking at the two candidates, I would think Carr would be a better fit for what Kellen Moore does, just because of the balance in the running game, whereas Byron Leftwich and Bruce Arians, they've always kind of been like, we're just going to vertically throw the ball down the field and attack defenses through the air, and hasn't had much of a run game, even when Bruce Arians was in Arizona with Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer. Those guys weren't throwing the ball a ton. Or, I'm sorry, they weren't running the ball a ton. It was all through the air. Anquan Boldin, you had Larry Fitzgerald, you know, guys like that.
Now, who is your third candidate?
Yeah, the third candidate, I'll go to Green Bay. Nathaniel Hackett is the offensive coordinator there. He's 41 years old, so another relatively younger guy. He's been the offensive coordinator in Green Bay for 3 years. He has been in the NFL for 13. He's the son of Paul Hackett, so any old-time USC Trojans fans or even Raider fans might know that name. This one's a little bit interesting, though. He does not call the plays in Green Bay. The head coach, Matt LaFleur, does, but he is involved in the game planning. He has called plays before. He's kind of got an interesting resume when I sat down and looked at it. He started out in Tampa Bay in 06 and 07, so he was part of John Gruden's staff. I believe Gruden was still around in 06. Maybe it was right when he got let go, but there may have been some crossover with Gus Bradley there as well. I don't know exactly off the top of my head if those two guys were there in 06 or 07. Then he went to Buffalo for a year as an offensive quality control coach, went to the college ranks, resurrected Syracuse football for 3 years, then found his way back to the NFL, where in 2013 and 14 he was with Buffalo. Offensive coordinator had some success, you know, from 2013. They were 6-10 with E.J. Manuel, but then in 2014 they were able to win 9 games. They made a change with Kyle Orton. Not the best two quarterbacks to judge a play caller from, but they did get Kyle Orton to the playoffs. And then he went on to Jacksonville, where he did spend time with Gus Bradley. In 2015, he was the quarterback coach when Bradley was the head coach, and got Blake Bortles to throw 35 touchdowns, believe it or not, that year. And then he became the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville. In 2017, they were 5th in scoring, and they went to the AFC Championship game. Now, a lot of that was predicated on the defense they had there, but they were still the 5th best scoring team in the league. They were the number one rushing team in the league that year, and they were number 2 in the red zone. So they did build it a lot around the run game, some physicality. 2018, they regressed 5-11, 31st in scoring, and then he's moved on to Green Bay. So when Matt LaFleur got the job in Green Bay, when he came over, I believe, from San Francisco, he hires Hackett to be the offensive coordinator. It's tough judging him now because you have Aaron Rodgers there too. So how much of it is really Paul Hackett? How much of it is Matt LaFleur? How much of it is Aaron Rodgers? But at the end of the day, last year, they were number one in the league, 66 touchdowns. They were 80% in the red zone. They were almost 50% on third down. They don't run the ball particularly consistently there the last 3 years. They've gone 15th, 8th, and 21st in the league. The scoring was – What was interesting is, you had Aaron Rodgers, and I thought they'd be a little bit higher in some of these categories, but they were 17th in offense in 2019, 14th in scoring. 2020, they were great. They were number two in offense, number one in scoring. And then this year, they've kind of regressed back, 15th in offense, 15th in scoring. So this is a guy that comes from, he's coached under Shanahan and McVay. Maybe you're trying to strike gold here. He was higher on my list before I dove into all the numbers. Now I would bump him down the list a little bit. He did get an interview with Atlanta last year for their head coaching job, and kind of some of the research I've seen said he's a pretty high-energy guy, but there's some quirkiness to kind of the personality. I don't specifically know firsthand what that means or what those personality traits are, but is that something that's going to play in Vegas? I don't know. This one is a little murky for me, but he's definitely going to get some interviews around the league.
Now, you had mentioned his dad was, a USC guy, and I think Paul Hackett, was he with the Chiefs for a while too, right? His dad?
Yes, I believe so, yeah.
And for me, like you said, I trained in on the quirky part, because I look at it, like you said, it's, how is that going to play? Head coach, first-time head coach in a market or with a team that has underachieved and not been successful, that'll be interesting to me because I want to see, like, part of head coach, you got to be scheme sound, but you also got to be like a pretty much a people person and know the vibe and temperature of your team. Now, you also hit on he has worked with Aaron Rodgers, and everyone knows that Aaron Rodgers is kind of, he's an anomaly as far as quarterbacks and as far as coordinators and how much of the success is him this for the last couple of years and how much of success is Hackett. That bear is serious watching. Now,
the other side note on Paul Hackett, just looking at it, Paul Hackett, his father, did work for the Raiders. He was a special projects in 2008, and then he was the Raiders quarterback coach in 2009, 2010.
So there's that link with the team, like the link with the franchise, not so much this concurrent version of the roster, but that link with the actual organization. So that will also bear watching. When we come back from break, we will have 4 and 5, and I got a couple questions about each, and one candidate apparently, if Ryan doesn't cover it, might be out of left field. But you are listening to the 4 Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the 4 Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, who is your next candidate?
Yeah, we're going to go to the head coach with House Park head coaching experience this time. I'm going to go Doug Peterson, the ex-coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, who won the Super Bowl back in 2017 season. 53 years old, so this is the oldest of the candidates, 12 years coaching experience in the NFL. I know a lot of fans are going to be like, oh, no, Doug Peterson. I don't want Doug Peterson. But when you kind of look at it, this one actually makes sense. At the end of the day, out of all these names I'm going over, this is the one that I think has the strongest likelihood to actually get the job. It's a guy that's won a Super Bowl. He's coached under Andy Reid. He had time in Kansas City. A lot of people remember him as the backup quarterback to Brett Favre in Green Bay for a long time. But when you look at it, he went 42-37-1. So he's over 500 in his coaching career. He's been to the playoffs in 3 out of his 5 years. I don't remember the last Raiders coach that's done anything close to that. They haven't. And since, I think, John Gruden, probably back in the day, he probably has a blueprint for a staff ready to go. Having been a coach in this league for 5 years, he knows a lot of people. He's only 1 year removed, so it's not like we're talking about a guy that's been out of the game for 5, 10, 15 years. He's been known to be fairly aggressive in terms of play calling and analytics a few years ago before it started to pick up steam around the league. So if you're looking for an aggressive play caller, this is your guy. He beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, so that's always a feather in your cap. He beat Bill Belichick. But kind of his coaching career, he was a quarterback coach in Philadelphia from 2009 to 2012. Andy Reid brought him over to Kansas City in 2013 to be his first offensive coordinator, so he was there from 2013 to 2015. And then the Eagles hired him back as their head coach 2016 to 2020. But, kind of looking at it, they took Carson Wentz, so he had a rookie quarterback day one in 2016, finished 7-9, were middle of the pack in scoring. They were 16th. 2017, they go 13-3. They're the number one scoring team in the league. Carson Wentz, if you remember, tears his ACL diving into the end zone against the Rams, and they actually went on to win the Super Bowl with Nick Foles at that point. So he was able to make a quarterback change late in the year and still take that team not only to the Super Bowl, winning it 9-7 in 2018. Again, Carson Wentz gets hurt, plays 11 games. They finished 20th in scoring. 2019, 9-7. Carson Wentz plays the whole season. They end up middle of the pack, 15th in scoring. And then 2020 was kind of when the rails came off. They went 4-11-1. Carson Wentz again plays 12 games, misses four games. They finished 26th. So it started to go downhill there a little bit at the end. But if you look at it in totality, he had a winning season, 3 out of 5, 3 playoff appearances, won a Super Bowl, did it while training a rookie quarterback. Kind of how it ended there, there was some disagreements with management over how he wanted to proceed forward, whether that was Carson Wentz, whether it was Jalen Hurts, whether it was to go another direction. Ultimately, the owner, Jeffrey Loria, decided to stick with Carson Wentz and then ended up having to trade him when they brought in Nick Sirianni. But I think, you know, this is a guy that does make a lot of sense. He's won a Super Bowl. Mark Davis can sell this in Las Vegas early on. It's a guy that does have kind of a personality that I think would fit in the market. He's Andy Reid's in the division. He's worked for Andy Reid. It creates a little bit more rivalry between the Raiders and the Chiefs. It's a guy that I think could work well with Derek Carr, with the offense, and make the changes they need to make. And, you know, this one to me, like I said, there is a connection here, too, with Mike Mayock. If Mayock stays around, Mayock did the pregame TV with the Eagles for a number of years. So there is a connection here. So this one, I think, I wouldn't have him number one on my list, but if you ask me if I was going to Vegas, I had to bet on one of these guys who would get the job at this point, I would make him the favorite.
There's so much for Doug Peterson that's kind of interesting where, you know, he's had that type of long NFL career on him as a coach and as a player. He was the Eagles starting quarterback for, I want to say, 12 games, and then they started Donovan McNabb. That's how far back he goes. He's one of, like you said, he is an interesting prospect for me for a couple of reasons, because I did a quick little scan about his end of time in Philadelphia where, yeah, they fell off offensively, but there is interesting behind-the-scenes stuff. What he had a kind of a feud going with Howie Roseman, the Eagles GM, where Jeffrey Lurie gave Doug Peterson, this was in The Athletic, 24 hours to make moves and fire coaches. If he didn't, he'd be fired. And to me, he dealt with a long history of micromanaging in Philadelphia. Roseman and Lurie were pretty much on his back about every little detail. He fought to keep certain guys like Frank Reich. He wanted to keep him in Philly. And Roseman and Peterson had words. This was before Reich took the coach job, of course. But I can't turn away and I can't dismiss somebody who won a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback, inventive, and like I said, he had that type of personality that might be conducive to Vegas. And if I'm him, this might be, I don't know, this kind of feels like one of the ones, because he kind of got, if all reports are correct from different sources, he got a raw deal in Philadelphia. He got a complete raw deal in Philadelphia, and he was painted as the, not so much the villain, but the problem, and he wasn't. That was an upper management upstairs type of issue. And I think with Peterson, since Mark Davis is not really the interfering type, if Peterson gets the gig because they hire a GM to hire him, I can see this working out very well, and I can see it being a good fit. Do you see any potential problems or any red flags that you might have about him?
Yeah, the only if he has disagreements again with whoever the GM is, whoever is the GM with Doug Peterson, hopefully has a working relationship with him in the past, understands him, understands the personality, because you can't have what happened to Philadelphia happen again, where he's basically butting heads with management, roster decisions. So definitely he's a strong personality, and it's something where the GM has to have comfort in being able to work with him. Now, is that Mike Mayock? I don't know. I know they probably do have a relationship. My one concern here would be if Mark Davis is looking at it like, okay, I'm going to keep Mayock for one more year and see what happens, and then they do bring in Doug Peterson, and it doesn't work out year one. And let's be honest, it might not, because this roster, there's going to be significant changes next year at various positions. What does he do at that point? Does he let Mayock go, and then you bring in a new GM? So I think if you're going to tie a new coach in, it should be, to me, it should be another GM, not Mike Mayock. So if they go out and hire one of the guys we talked about yesterday, and then he decides to bring in Doug Peterson, and they come in together and they work as a unit, I'm all aboard. My only concern here is if it's Mike Mayock stays, they bring in Peterson, and they don't, you know, let's say they go 7-9 or 7-10 next year, what happens in the GM seat? So looking down the road, that would be my only hesitation.
Now, who is your last candidate?
Yeah, the last candidate is a guy who had a lot of steam last year. Again, earlier this year, it's kind of slowed down of late. That's Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator in Buffalo. He's had a lot of success in Buffalo the last 4 years as the offensive coordinator. He was the 2020 assistant NFL assistant coach of the year. Basically, he's getting a lot of credit for the development of Josh Allen, who came in as a raw, toolsy quarterback that had accuracy issues, and he turned him into an MVP candidate within 3 years, improving his accuracy. Completion percentage his rookie year was 52.8. Last year, got all the way up to 69.2. This year, he's right around 65.7%. So when you start looking at it, you know, that they are pretty creative on offense, but to me, the balance, there's no balance here. So it typically is very pass-heavy. The numbers are okay running the ball-wise, but a lot of that has to do with the quarterback scrambling or quarterback design plays, whereas if Brian Daboll doesn't have that option, and clearly if he comes to Las Vegas and has Derek Carr, the quarterback running is not an option, can he build enough balance in the offense to have a, you know, at least a league average running game? I don't know if he can. And then you start looking at his career. He's been around for a long time. He's been in the NFL for 21 years. He was a defensive assistant with New England. He was a wide receivers coach with New England. And you start to see a pattern where he hasn't held jobs very long. Then he's 2 years quarterback coach with the Jets. Then he's 2 years offensive coordinator in Cleveland under Eric Mangini, where they were 29th and 32nd in offense, not exactly a glowing resume. Then he goes to Miami for 1 year as the offensive coordinator, Tony Sperano. They're 20th in offense. Then he goes 1 year in Kansas City as the offensive coordinator with Romeo Crennel. They're 24th in offense. So he was an offensive coordinator at three different spots in 3 different years, and none of those offenses finished above 20th. He goes back to New England as a tight ends coach in 2013 to 2016. Ends up at Alabama in 2017. Was the offensive coordinator, Nick Saban. They win the national championship. If you remember, that's the game Jalen Hurts was the quarterback, was replaced in the second half by Tua Tagovailoa, who was a freshman. They go on to beat Georgia 26 to 23. And the Bills bring him in under Sean McDermott to run that offense. So he's done a good job in Buffalo. If you take the first 2 years out where, you know, Josh Allen was a rookie that needed a lot of development, 2018 they're 30th in scoring, 2019 they're 23rd. But then you saw the jump last year. Buffalo was second in scoring, fourth in passing, 24th in running the ball. There's that balance question. And then again this year, we look around and we think Buffalo's having a bad year because they're not doing what they did last year, but the numbers are actually there. They're fifth in scoring. This team's averaging 28 points a game. Josh Allen's at 65.7% completion. They're eighth in passing. They're 13th in running. Again, Josh Allen has over 400 yards rushing, so that skews that number. So, but I do have – it's a guy that I thought was going to get the Chargers job last year because of his relationship with Tom Telesco, the GM there. Didn't happen. They obviously went Brandon Staley. But can the Bills rebound enough late here this year to where he's going to pick up a little bit of steam? We've seen the balance was an issue in the game on Monday night with the weather. They're playing in Buffalo. They haven't figured out how to run the ball in 2 years. I don't know if that's an anomaly because they want Josh Allen to throw the ball so much, or really is there an issue with the run game scheme here? I haven't seen enough tape of Buffalo to make a call one way or the other. But either way, he's going to get head coaching interviews around the league. He's a guy that I was really high on earlier this year, and now I'm kind of, you know, souring a little bit when you start looking at this resume. You know, why is he bouncing around every year to a new job? Granted, these weren't great teams. We're talking about the Browns in 2009, 2010, the Dolphins in 2011, the Chiefs prior to Andy Reid. We all knew what they were. So he wasn't coaching high-powered offenses that had playmakers, but he does deserve credit for what he's done with Josh Allen. So we'll see what happens with Brian Daboll. But like I said, I think he should be on the list. I don't think he's the favorite at this point.
This is a quote from one of his players. I hate to keep giving him so much credit because I don't want anyone to steal him from me. He's a guy that knows what he's doing. He knows the flow of the game. He knows when to call. He knows when to call what. We just trust him. Whatever he calls, I'm running it. He always has our back, and I ain't seen him miss yet. When you read quick analysis of Brian Daboll, one of the things, not just X's and O's that he's proficient at, but building player relationships. If they so want to keep this guy as their OC that they don't want to give him too much press because they're afraid he might get poached, that's high praise. That says a lot in a moment where we talked about a coach before who might have issues with conflict and being able to get along. This guy is the complete opposite. He gets along and he works. One of the guys, just randomly, because I'm for the draft, kind of breaking down stuff on Michigan, is there any way you see, because of his previous relationship with the Raiders as a coach, Jim Harbaugh going to Vegas?
Yeah, I knew this question was coming after that came out today. He has coached with the Raiders. He was a quarterback coach back in the early 2000s, I want to say. Mm-hmm. So there is a familiarity here between the Darius family and the Harbaugh family. Is he going to leave Michigan? They're in the Final Four. They finally beat Ohio State. They finally got over the hump. They have a chance to win a national championship. Does Jim Harbaugh really want to make the jump back to the league right now, especially seeing what these college coaches are making? Or is this more the agent spinning it that way, knowing the Raiders have an opening, there is a connection, let's throw it out there, let's get a new contract? Because I don't know what John Harbaugh is making, but I want to say it's somewhere in the $4.5 million range. He's not making $10 million like these guys that just signed contracts. So to me, I think this is a ploy by the agent. Could I see it happening with Mark Davis because he wants to make a splash? Yes. Do I think it's a good fit? Absolutely not. I don't want to watch power eye formation, run, that we would see with John Harbaugh. The Raiders don't have the defense that the 49ers had when he was there. I don't think it's a good fit schematically for 2022 where the NFL is going. Mark Davis might do it just to try to appease a certain section of the fan base and get a marquee name that he could sell in Vegas. I don't think it would be a good hire.
I kind of agree. I think that, honestly, of the guys you mentioned and the case you made for each, it is. If I were choosing, it would be Peterson or Moore. You have one guy who seems like he's an innovator. The other guy seems like he's also ahead of the curve. Even though being 53 or 52, he's not considered a young coach because he's won a Super Bowl. He has that experience. There's something about Kellen Moore and the way the Dallas Cowboys scheme their offense that should excite Raider fans. And if you're Mark Davis, one of those two, it should be their head coach. How can people interact with you on social media? What do you have coming up?
Yeah, they can reach me. The handle is at RHOLM22, RHOLM22. Don't have much coming up the rest of this week until the game, after the game Sunday. Just got finished grinding the All-22 of the Washington football team game. It was just as bad on the All-22 as it was on the broadcast. It was tough to get through. This offense is just all over the place right now. So hopefully, the Raiders figure it out here moving forward. Big game this Sunday. If they lose on Sunday in Kansas City, you can basically stick a fork in the season. So it's do or die at this point. And I kind of agree with you, looking at the list. I think Doug Peterson is the front runner in the clubhouse if they're wanting an experienced coach. If they want a young guy, I'm clearly leaning Kellen Moore or Byron Leftwich over Hackett or Daboll. I'd love to see how Leftwich handles the interview process and how that goes, because I think that he has a chance to be a good head coach in this league. There's a presence about him that I think that's even more than what Kellen Moore has. Kellen Moore is more, you know, the brainiac. I'm going to scheme you up. I'm going to go in the lab, which is great. I want that too. So any of the three of those guys, I would think would be good fits.
You can find this podcast wherever you find quality podcasts. You can interact with us at FBC Raiders on Twitter. This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.